And we're back at 801. Lots happening on the national scene. And here to help discuss is Jason Mollica. What a job he has done. Actually launched, helped launch Fox Radio back in 2003. And such a prominent individual these days over at American University. We welcome Mr. Mollica. Jason, a very happy new year to you, sir.
Same to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, I was just talking about Puerto Rico, Jason. I mean, it just baffles me with all that has happened there with those poor folks down there, with the natural disasters and everything else. You know, if you kind of read between the lines a bit of the corruption that has been taking place within the confines, it has been incredible. It really is. And, you know, a lot of people will get on the President of the United States for having his doubts, withholding stuff, because he knows financially they are completely mismanaged. And if you, again, read some of the backstories, you kind of reason to yourself why. Incredible stuff going on down there.
It's, you know, and I think any time there's a disaster like this happened, I mean, Puerto Rico's been ravaged over the last number of years between hurricanes and now the earthquakes that have gone on. If aid is sitting somewhere to be delivered and it's not getting there, yeah, I mean, that's a gross mismanagement of, you know, just direction. And also, you know, why anything that can be used to help people out, especially the way Puerto Rico has been hit hard. There hopefully will be more answers, because I think not only do the people of Puerto Rico deserve answers to get the aid that they need, but I think the American people deserve some answers as well. Why aren't things getting down there like they should? Why aren't things why aren't people down there getting the help that they need as soon as possible?
Yeah, 100,000 people still without power. It's hard to believe. Now, listen, we know the two hurricanes, Irma and Maria, we get it. But, you know, we told the folks, you know, with these 10 trailers that election offices found containing food and, you know, all kinds of baby paraphernalia, it is just unconscionable to think. I mean, what else can you think as far as the corruptive practices going on there within the ranks? I mean, it's just unreal. It's got to improve. They need to fix that real quickly here.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of situations, unfortunately, where we see, you know, things falling through the cracks or any sort of mismanagement. And when it gets to that, you really do need to reassess. And I know it sounds simple, you know, reassessing what the management structure is. Like, why are these sort of situations happening? I mean, this isn't really the first time with FEMA that we've seen issues. And I think and when it comes down to it, if we're depending or other nations that we're offering to help with, are, you know, through FEMA, especially in the case of Puerto Rico, if they're not getting the aid that they need when they need it, that's a huge problem and needs to be fixed, you know, if not today, yesterday.
No question. Jason Mollica with us. I was watching the college football game last night, LSU-Clemson, and the president, the first lady, making an appearance, national anthem, standing O. Over the Superdome, very friendly confines of the state of Louisiana, no question. But, you know, even more so, the thought process, to me at least, came that they were very supportive of President Trump over the last couple of months, especially with the tensions of Iran and the taking out of Soleimani, which I'll get your take on. And, of course, all that's leading up to an apparent process of a Senate trial here for impeachment. Did you get a sense of that as well, Jason? Tons of support. You kind of feel that way around the country. He's going to get his support.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're going to a place where I think in many ways you look at the you know, the fan bases for both schools. I think you're looking at a situation where, you know, in college football, it probably you're going to get a little more of a different reaction there than you would at, say, a pro football stadium potentially. But I think in that case, you know, you want, as any president in many ways, when a situation like what happened in Iran has gone on, I think you do want to show an outward sense of strength. Like, just because this has happened, just because we've been, you know, we've said some tough things, or the president and the White House have come out with a lot of tough talk. You want to show a public face of, you know, we're not just saying these things, we stand by it. So a public show of strength, a public showing of, you know, I'm here, I'm still going about my business. I don't think, you know, coming from a PR, you know, background, obviously, as well now, I don't think that's something that goes unnoticed in the eyes of the public. Now, you can't spin it any other way. He did get a very warm reception at the game last night. There's no way you can come out and say, oh, well, there were people booing. Look, that people boo commissioners, people boo elected officials, people will boo the president regardless. Even if there were people booing, you could hear the strong, you know, support that he had when he came out on the field last night.
Now, let's also talk about the Wizard of Oz of Iranian terror, as Soleimani was called, Qasem Soleimani. I mean, you know, a lot of people also forget, and I try to remind folks, you know, the attacking of us in Benghazi, were to shut down the U.S. arms pipeline from that city, the anti-regime, the jihad groups in Syria, and ultimately to drive the U.S. out of Libya entirely, both of which was accomplished by Qasem Soleimani. So let's not forget the days of Benghazi. You know, a lot of people forget that and everything else. This was a bad guy beyond. You know, and people tend to forget that that story from way back.
Yeah, and I think that, too, people should remember, especially when it comes to Iran, is that, you know, even though over the years we have attempted to sort of normalize relations and try to come to some sort of agreement so there's not any more destabilization in that area, it doesn't always work. Diplomacy isn't always, unfortunately, going to work. So, you know, what the president did, and as far as, you know, authorizing the strike, you know, and I think in many ways, while there was a condemnation of it from some circles, I think when it comes down to it, this isn't someone who was, you know, waving around the bringing white doves to the party and showing up in the cleanest, whitest robes that there can be. You know, he had a ton of blood on his hands, and while you may not agree with how it happened, you do end up, you know, removing someone that had a hand in many, many acts of, you could say, acts of terror against American interests, and even, you know, American held compounds around the Middle East. So I don't think, in many ways, as I look at it, you know, Soleimani's killing or being killed was a, while, you know, may not have been the most diplomatic, but then again, people will say diplomacy comes in different forms. And in this case, for the United States, this was the form of diplomacy that the president and, in general, the United States chose to use. And, you know, it's a tough argument to make that, in my opinion, of, you know, why he was killed. You know, why should you, you know, in a sense, you know, take out someone that has been a, you know, may not be a household name to people in the United States, like in the past, like a Saddam Hussein, or even if you go back to the Ayatollah Khomeini in the early 80s. But he clearly was someone that had a finger on the pulse of what was going on, especially when it came to destabilizing that area of the world.
I mean, you know, a lot of people will argue he could have been worse than Osama bin Laden. You know, I mean, setting up these empires, these financial empires, taking a percentage of the float on all foreign currency exchange from Iraqi banks. This is a guy who netted close to $1 billion a month, black money, to finance his empire. You know, that, listen, when you have a chance to take out an individual of this nature, you have to, and such the back and forth that has been taking place. And, of course, you know, you got a lot of back and forth right now on Capitol Hill. And I guess we're at the next step, Jason Moliker, and the historic impeachment of the president looming now since, what, December 18th or so? And after all of this strategizing and negotiating, I guess the pieces are falling into place for a Senate trial. You know, I'll tell you, the arrogance being showed by so many here. You know, I was flipping channels yesterday, was watching Adam Schiff in and around it with his explanation, and it's almost like, you know, the luster now has completely faded here. But we are getting ready for whatnot. I mean, what do you expect in coming days here? I know that some of the Senate Republicans have recently said they're actually open now to calling witnesses during this thing. What do you make of all this?
Well, I think obviously there's been so many other things going on recently. I mean, obviously you had the holiday break, and then there were still discussions and still, you know, news about the impeachment proceedings going on. But it really, you know, in a sense, you know, with what happened in Iran, you know, going on since the, you know, right after the first of the year into the first week of the new year, not that people have been distracted, but there have been other things that have, you know, kind of come to top of mind. I think now what's going to need to happen is, from my perspective, is you're going to have to really reorient some people into understanding where we are in the process. Yes, the Democrats in the House move forward with articles of impeachment. They, you know, now it's on in the, you know, will be hand in the hands of the Senate soon. I know, you know, Ms. Pelosi was, you know, obviously saying, oh, it's, you know, we're going to be passing it over soon. It's going to be soon. And I think in many ways, you know, the in the House, they didn't want it overshadowed by, you know, overshadowed by another, you know, something else going way. And I think in this case, you know, the last thing you want if you're, you know, looking to make certain that the impeachment articles, go through, you don't want something like Iran to get in the way. You don't want something that's going to sort of, you know, throw up a cloud of smoke in the way of news like this. So I can see what's going to happen is, you know, the Democrats are in the House, they will put forth the articles. And then I really think if you do have a number of members of the Senate, especially on the Republican side, that are looking for, you know, will be open to having some sort of trial, I think it'll be intriguing to see what exactly will happen in that case. Will there be more witnesses? Who is going to be representing the president in some way? So there's a lot of what ifs, but I think we'll start getting some answers now as we see these, you know, some of these Republicans that are willing to see the hearings go forward in the Senate, and seeing how they feel it should play out. I know the American people have spoken in the sense that we see polls in many directions. The last poll that I had read, obviously people were still not necessarily certain, but as we've moved closer now, it seems like it may be leaning towards people want to hear more and may be more open to the proceedings when it comes to the Senate. So I really am intrigued to see how this ends up playing out. It obviously played out differently in the House. I really want to see, and I'm intrigued to see just how this will be, you know, not spun, but how it will be put forth in the Senate. Who are we going to hear from? How open will the senators be to kind of getting both sides? And that, you know, that leads me to believe that if some of these senators are interested in hearing what's being done, that they are at least coming at this with an open mind. And I think that from the start, regardless of spin, could be a real moment for the Senate to show either that this was either a, you know, quote unquote witch hunt, or this is that there's actually some you know, there's some meat to what's been going on in the House.
I'm going to be interested to see if there could be any flips here. I mean, remember, Mitch McConnell didn't do himself any favors, I thought, by pretty much stating he's in coordination with the White House as far as maybe setting up, you know, whatever, as far as the upcoming trial. And I know that Lisa Murkowski was one in particular as far as not liking the proceedings as far as how Mitch McConnell was going about his business. You wonder, and remember, there's only three or four that you can afford as flips here, Jason Mollica. You wonder if there'll ever be more. You know, could there be any type of decisions made by other GOPers who say, you know what, I don't know anymore. You know, it's I thought Nancy Pelosi did herself more harm than good by holding on to the two articles for so long. Now, Mitch McConnell, maybe he didn't do himself any favors in that regard. What's your take on that?
Well, think of it this way. While, you know, there was a lot of speculation, and like you just said, you know, Ms. Pelosi may have not have done a good job of holding on to the articles, you know, through the break, instead of, you know, letting the, it was sort of a game of let's see who blinks. And obviously, you're right. Mitch McConnell didn't do himself any favors by, you know, kind of seeming like he was lockstep with the White House. I think any time that a senator that is, you know, in charge of, will be in charge or will be, you know, making sure that proceedings go hopefully smoothly, him saying that he is already basically on the side of the president, that you can play that on the Democratic side to many ways. So with Ms. Pelosi holding on to the articles of impeachment through this holiday break and then into the new year and letting it fester in a sense, it allowed a and maybe a crack in the armor of the Republicans in the Senate to say, you know, if Mitch McConnell's going to sound like he's going to walk hand in hand with the president, well, there are going to be other Republicans that will say, look, that we need to show the American people that we're being honest and we're going to give this a fair shake. You're telling us and you're telling the American people that you're going to just listen to the president and walk hand in hand with him. That doesn't show that we're really being open and transparent. So I really think that Mitch McConnell made not only a huge blunder politically, but also public relations wise as well. And so far, even though there are many that thought Ms. Pelosi made a big error politically and public relations wise, she has now come out in a sense as looking very smart. She held on to them for a reason. She knew that there would be a chance that the Republicans would have a little bit of a maybe moment of, getting nervous. And it appears that is the case right now.
Listening to Jason Mollica, star of Fox News, a major individual who got Fox News radio off the ground way back in 2003. Such a prominent individual right now at the Great American University. That brings us to tonight, the debate in Iowa. Of course, the caucuses on February the 3rd. Then you got New Hampshire, and then you got Super Tuesday. And here we go. Let the games begin. And I was taken back by the fact that Cory Booker now is out, the senator from New Jersey, announcing, Jason, he's ending his campaign, failed to qualify for tonight's debate in Iowa. And while a lack of funding was a major problem, his team also said the looming trial of impeachment would likely sideline some of the big fundraising and campaign efforts. Is that a viable excuse, you think, for some here involved? Fundraising and everything else, I mean, it's only going to be a couple of weeks. So what's your take there?
I don't, you know, from my perspective, maybe it was a small part. But I think when you look at Senator Booker, while he is a, you know, let's be honest, he's a strong individual. He's made a good name for himself first and obviously in Newark and, you know, in New Jersey. And then obviously, you know, getting to the Senate. But, from my perspective, I think what happened was, He's very good with groups of people. He's sort of a, if you think about it, he's more of a motivational person in a lot of ways than he is a politician. And not saying that being a motivational type of person is a bad thing. But the messaging that he put forth, while he did have some good points, wasn't something that really got people excited on a large scale. He had a very, very strong, a loyal campaign team. They were willing to go to the wire with him, and I think that's wonderful. I think it just didn't echo with the nation and the American people enough to say, "Wow, you know, he should be higher in the polls," or we feel more strongly about him. Sure, I mean, if you don't have a lot of money in your coffers, if you don't have a lot of money coming in, that's going to be an issue, obviously. I think in some ways saying that, you know, what could be happening in the Senate with impeachment as a big reason for donors, I don't know whether that is something that would be the main reason why he should drop out or why he would drop out. I think in many ways it's just that, unfortunately for Mr. Booker, his message didn't resonate throughout the country. He had some strong moments during the debates, but it clearly wasn't enough for him to move forward and even get on the stage for tonight and even going forward in, you know, being a candidate for president in 2020.
You know, I kind of have mixed feelings for Booker. Like you, I feel he's a very strong individual on the stage as far as debates. You know, I look back at his tenure as far as being mayor of Newark, New Jersey, arguably one of the toughest cities in America to preside over. Mixed bag of reviews there. Went to the Senate. All of a sudden, he wants to be the president of the United States. You know, I put some of the onus on candidates of this nature, Jason, because, you know, it's their job. If you know that the criteria are in place from a financial standpoint to determine your standing as far as getting on that stage, well, guess what? It's on you. Whether it be fundraising, making the rounds, getting the message out in maybe a bigger way, that's on you. If you know you're going to be faltered by the fact you just don't have enough in the coffers at this point. With that being said, though, I take exception to the Tom Steyers and even the Michael Bloombergs of this world, who, because they have deep pockets, they qualify. I'm sorry. I have a better chance of being president of the United States than Tom Steyer. And not only that, you know, what did Mike Bloomberg ever do? I give him credit for stabilizing the city in some sort of way, invoked his own third term and everything else. Let's not forget, this guy was a Republican as a mayor. He endorsed two Republicans for president, that being George W. and John McCain in 2008. People forget that. So, in essence, are we really going to embrace Michael Bloomberg as a Democratic nominee? I don't think so. So I have a bit of a problem in that regard regarding deep pockets. But to me, Cory Booker drove his own train here, and he didn't do it fast enough.
And I think that comes back to, you know, not being able to get your message out. And clearly there are people around, I think people on the East Coast knew him very well. He obviously is very well known in the tri-state area because of what he did in Newark, because of his visibility. And let's be honest, I mean, being he was on Twitter I know one of the things that people bring up a lot is, you know, how he reacted to, you know, snow issues. And if someone needed a plow to go through, he would say, well, I'm on it, or he would show up and actually shovel. That's great in a city, and especially in a place that, in many ways, you know, you're right, Newark is a tough place. It's still a tough place. But how does that resonate throughout the country? And I think even in some ways, too, you see candidates that you would think would be successful. Oh, this is a great person. They have charisma. They're a good speaker. But how does it resonate with the people of the United States? How are they going to view a candidate? So, and you're right. And when it comes to money, you do need to have it. If you don't have a lot of money and you're not raising a lot of money and you don't have the donor base to help support you, your campaign is not going to go on for long. So while, you know, you made a good point as far as saying mixed feelings, I think, you know, you want to see as much variety in candidates out there. You know, I think right now we still have variety, but is it the amount of what the American people want? It seems that in many ways, it seems like the American people are speaking. They do. These are the people they would, you know, seem to want, or at least, you know, people that are staying in polls that they want. And Cory Booker just didn't make that sort of impact on people. He still can, you know, do great things in the Senate. He can still represent New Jersey very well. But unfortunately, I think it's just where his message and the donors that he would have liked to have just didn't come in from across the country.
No question. We'll see what happens tonight. 9 o'clock from Iowa on CNN. Jason Molica, always a pleasure, sir. Very happy New Year. Now you're driving in the rain in and around, so be careful. And we'll talk soon. How's that?
Same here. Thanks, Jay. Have a great day.